across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Thursday, July 6th. It is National Fried Chicken Day. It is International Kissing Day. And coming up this hour, I know the term is cradle to grave, but we're going to go with from cradle to college, conservative non-support. There are plenty of Wisconsin politicians eager to make life a bit worse from cradle to college. Scott Ross is going to take us through the fight to tame student loan debt and the recent setback by conservatives on the U.S. Supreme Court. Then at the bottom of the hour, in our hometown health segment, a postpartum doula will join Dr. Kristen Lyerly to talk about the benefits of extending women's post-pregnancy health care through Medicaid. And again, the latest setback by conservatives, this time in the Wisconsin legislature, on that front. If you'd like to join the show, 844-967-2789 is the phone number. The email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. We were going to stick to serious subject matters with Scott Ross in this hour. We will get to them eventually. We did not finish our conversation on what is arguably an equally important matter to, you know, the global state of happiness, and that, of course, would be Yacht Rock. So Scott Ross is here. One of the few reasons I stayed on Twitter this long. So please, Scott, as I mentioned last hour, please tell me you're going to be migrating over to Threads as well, so that I don't have to monitor two platforms anymore.
Well, let me just say a couple things. Okay. There's a lot there. One, the broadcast later in the day. How dare Dr. Lyerly and women think this radical notion that they have the same rights as, you know, men folk like you and I.
Right.
The other thing is, I created a Threads account. I don't know what I'm going to do. I know that, you know, TweetDeck, you know, proves there is nothing that, you know, it's that joke of like, why is Mrs. Elon always on top? Well, because Elon can only screw up. But like, you know,
TweetDeck was wonderful. It was, he showed up and just burned the platform to the ground.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, and that's the thing that about Threads, because it's not like Zuckerberg, you know, other than,
oh, he's no angel. No.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like he's not, you know, a Nazi Nepo, apartheid, yeah, emerald mine heir. But like he, you know, he helped, you know, he's one of the major reasons that we ended up having Trump.
Right.
You know, that and, you know, tens of millions of racists, they don't need this platform. Like neither one of them benefits from having a fully functioning platform, because mm-hmm. it is a vehicle in which their ridiculousness and the failure of their corporate, you know, mechanisms, machinations, whatever you want to say, is best publicized by those platforms. So they want one that like they can make money off of, but they don't want it to work too well, in my opinion.
Right. And they'll ruin Threads at some point, just like they've ruined Twitter and you know, the Facebook, what they did in 2016 through Cambridge Analytica. I get all
that. Well, I mean, we're routing it through Instagram. Like have an Instagram account that's not the same as my Twitter account, because I lost the password to my old Instagram. I have like, you know, 20, I follow like 20 people because it's just not my thing. I don't want this, you know, pictures of my face to be like the vehicle in which like I communicate, because that's, you know, leading with your chin literally, and in my case, a really bad way. So,
all right. Well, I will be looking for you there anyway, in the hopes of that. All right. We were discussing Yacht Rock last time around, and I did not have a chance to go to my favorite website title so far this week, a Yacht Rock quiz. I can go for that. See what they did there? Little Hall and Oates.
There you go.
So we got time for a couple of questions. Then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk seriously about student loan debt. All right. This seminal Yacht Rock album took 2 years to record and was the most expensive record ever made at the time it was released in 1980. Is it the Doobie Brothers' The Captain and Me, Toto's Four, or Steely Dan's Gaucho?
I'll say Toto's Four.
It was Steely Dan's Gaucho. Yeah. All right. Which of the following artists is not considered a yacht rocker? Is it Robbie Dupree, Boss Skaggs, Jackson Brown?
Well, let me just say this, that's crazy that that's your question, because I was driving to another radio station affiliated with your network yesterday, and the traffic was terrible, and I had on I just had my Apple on shuffle, and I got Robbie Dupree's Key Largo, which I think is the embodiment of like yacht rock, because it's really a terrible, terrible, unlistenable to song if you listen to the lyrics.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's Bertie Higgins is Key Largo. Robbie Dupree is Steal Away.
No, I will disagree with you, because I've listened to Key Largo. I mean, it was there. It was up on the, you know, it was on my thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'll show you my phone, Pat. Don't go to the mattresses with me on this one, you know. But anyhow. Yeah, I'll just claim whatever. My house was a Motown house. Like my, you know, late 1960s parents were like Motown. But then my dad lost his job in the steel mill in 81, and we became a country music house. So when we had the revitalization of country with Garth Brooks, like, and I was in college, it sent a shiver in my spine, because I associated that with like poverty and my parents crying.
Getting back to the question now, Robbie, sorry. It's Jackson Brown who is not considered.
Yes, that was what I would have said.
Yacht rock. The other 14 questions we're going to save for sometime when I can have you on for another full hour. We're going to talk student loan debt and get your forecast from Weatherology and the Brewers Cubs from last night. All just ahead on this Thursday morning on Up North News Radio. We'll be back.
Unchain my heart.
As mentioned, this was released by Ray Charles this day in 1961. Really nice day, by and large, for much of the holiday weekend. There were, of course, the scattered showers here and there, and I did talk about the feeling of satisfaction when you can finish all your backyard grilling just before the next line of thunderstorms comes in or whatnot. But it was still, again, I was able to get on the boat all 4 days, the past 4 days. So that's a big win in my book. And now we'll see what the weather's like at midweek all across the state of Wisconsin, as we bring in Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology to tell us more. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, and it was overall not too bad. And if you were able to get that grilling in, that's great here, especially for the holiday yesterday. Today, we're looking at still a chance for some showers and storms for nearly everyone today, except around Amory and Baldwin. Just cloudy skies there with highs in the mid-70s, about 10 degrees below average for this time of the year as a cold front starts to push through that part of the state today. Otherwise, it looks like chance for showers and storms from Madison up to Oshkosh, over to Wausau, and down to the southwestern part of the state for the morning hours into the afternoon. Then a chance for these showers, these storms developing in the afternoon hours around Waukesha and Milwaukee. Looks like a marginal risk for severe weather today and tonight from a line extending from Madison to Oshkosh and for the southeastern part of the state. So definitely something we'll keep you posted on throughout the day. Otherwise, highs in the 80s for most, upper 70s around central Wisconsin. Sunny and cooler for most tomorrow as the cold front fully pushes through the state. In the 70s across the board, a little more cloud cover near Lake Michigan. Friday, sunny, mid-70s to right around about 80. Nothing too thrilling coming in to round out the work week. Then a slight a sneak peek at the weekend. Looks like at least slight on and off again chances for showers and storms for everyone. Starting to warm up a little bit by Sunday as a warm front starts to push through, with highs back into the 80s for most.
You know, whatever keeps us from having that drought word creep into our vocabulary more and more is a good thing. We'll take that spotty rain where we can get it. Jennifer, thank you so much. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
There's Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology. Right now it's 76 degrees in Madison. La Crosse reporting 72, Wausau 71, and up here on Lake Wissota it is 67 degrees. In sports, the Chicago Cubs left fielder Ian Happ was the star of yesterday's game, throwing out Brewers who were trying to score the winning runs in both the 10th and 11th innings. And as a result, the Cubs were able to hang on and win in 11 innings, 7-6 over the Brewers. It was the second time in as many days that the Cubs were able to put up six runs, but then only to see the Brewers come chipping right back. The Brewers won on Monday, fell short yesterday. Game three is this evening. Game four is tomorrow afternoon. Then the Cincinnati Reds come to town for the weekend before starting the All-Star break. There's so much to talk about in the area of the state budget bill that is now on Governor Evers' desk, and whether it is enough to try to use the line item veto to alter what Republicans have sent him, or if the entire package is either so irreparable, irredeemable, or just from a symbolic standpoint, should Governor Evers veto the whole thing and make Republicans come back into session? Now, we've talked about this for a few days here, about the different ways that you can look at this. One point of view that I wanted to share was, again, one of my favorite blogs to read is Jake Edwards, who writes about state financing, and he compares the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, the way that they've looked at both the Republican budget bill and what Governor Evers would propose that Republicans got rid of. And in both cases, pretty much the entire record $7 billion surplus, you know, goes away at the end of these 2 years. Now, I'm also quick to add a lot more goes into the state's rainy day fund. So it's not like we're going to end up with nothing. My point being, and Jake's point being, if you're going to use up most of a $7 billion surplus, what do you want to use it on? And Governor Evers, of course, was using it on public education, expanding health care, making child care more affordable. Republicans blew much of it on tax cuts geared toward the very rich. Is it something that the governor can save with his line item veto, or is it something that he should try to make Republicans negotiate with him for a better package overall? Contained in all of this is the, by way of a separate bill, separate bills, a compromise that was reached between the governor and Republicans about how much extra money is going to go into public education, but at the cost of making Republicans happy by putting a lot more money into vouchers as well, which overwhelmingly go to private and religious schools. And so to talk about that topic and more, Danielle Whitaker is joining us now, and she is a new school board member from Bristol in Kenosha County. And we want to talk more about, you know, what prompted her to get further involved in her community on her school board and the way that she sees issues like this. Danielle, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. It's nice to have you on Up North News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I guess to share a little bit about why I chose to run, and now that I'm a new school board member, I've always had a spirit of volunteerism. So I've been a part of our PTO, and the timing just felt right. I have two daughters. They're both starting their elementary journey. I'm also, I always tell people, I'm still an adult nerd. I love education. And so it just felt and fit right for me. So I became more involved in trying to understand school finance, because I'll tell you right now, like, school finance is an onion. And more you peel back, you really think, I came from the business sector in my traditional job. So you think it's going to look one way. And certainly with school finance, it looks very, very different. So last year in 2022, Bristol School did a facilities referendum that went really well. Our community passed that. And so we're getting the much needed facility and security and all the upgrades from our older building that was needed. But now really looking at the operating budget and what that looks like. And I have been learning as much as I possibly can this spring and participating in the budget process and trying to understand that. And I give a lot of credit to the Wisconsin Public Education Network. I attended one of their webinars, and they've been really, I'm so grateful for the education they've provided as a parent, and that's open to anyone. And they really use layman terms, because again, when I came in, Heather and her team were so gracious in giving me as much information as possible that I could understand.
Well, and the aforementioned Heather is Heather Dubois-Boren on from the Wisconsin Public Education Network. And Heather joins us for the conversation as well. And Heather, thank you so much. Good to have you here this morning. I think we might have you on mute. Are you hearing me okay there, Heather? We lost her. I think that
we'll get her back.
Yeah, we'll get her back in there. Once we do, then. I see. It says she might have to use a different browser to plug back in. So we'll continue our conversation here. As far as, you know, how the Wisconsin Public Education Network, they're very active about this. They want people to know, right, not just for this budget cycle, but overall for years, have been trying to let people know that what started as a little, fairly little by comparison, experiment in the city of Milwaukee now affects every Wisconsin school district. It affects every Wisconsin taxpayer. And as you said, Danielle, when anybody comes into this and starts to learn the system, you understand that this voucher setup is no, these aren't small onions. This is a very big deal.
Right. And I would say that my journey was that, you know, we needed to do an operating referendum in Bristol. Ours narrowly did not pass, along with a lot of other districts in the state. And so that was really disappointing and hard to see. But we lost by 80 votes. And really the big question about operating referendum and what that looks like, I feel like the more I learn about it, I feel like school finance language is really vague and confusing almost on purpose. And so I'm trying to educate as many people. That's why I'm here today, so that parents and community members can understand a little bit more about those questions. But I actually went and tried to testify, but there were so many people who came to the Joint Finance Committee to testify, which was amazing to see. But so many, you know what I was struck by, Pat, was that so many school board members, superintendents from across the state, we're talking from Beloit all the way up north to down in Southeast Wisconsin, like myself, and all were requesting the same thing, better investment in our public schools. And I mean, that was the vast majority of the people who were testifying. And for this budget now to not reflect what the majority of people were asking, and that the majority of school board members and superintendents, and we're talking, the people who are coming, I'll tell you, were from very ideologically conservative areas, rural schools and city schools, but everyone was coming to say the same thing, that the funds that we're receiving from the state are not cutting what we need today for student needs. And it was, I was optimistic at that point that they would listen. And now, you know, I really don't know. I'm not sure what to expect moving forward.
Well, allow me to take just a little editorial aside because of something you said there about how there are people who consider themselves conservatives and yet are not happy about what's happening with school spending. And it really is the difference for the listeners as to why they often hear me say right wing rather than conservative. Because I have a lot of conservative friends, a lot of people who vote Republican, but there are certain things, you know, when they say conservative, they mean fiscal conservative, that, you know, they don't want, you know, Donald Trump-esque, you know, gold toilets in our schools, but they still want our kids to have a good education. They believe in, you know, personal liberties and small government, but they also don't want, you know, abortion rights taken away, which is why you see conservatives, you know, voting the way they do on certain social issues. So to bring it back to the school funding issue, there is a right wing that wants to undermine public education for whatever reason. It may be religious and social, it may be fiscal, it may be profit motivated, whatever the case may be. And they've made tremendous inroads under the guise of fiscal conservatism or competition or parental rights. And Danielle, you're new to the Bristol School Board, but you've certainly seen enough to know that the voucher school program isn't some kind of a panacea. It isn't, I would argue in many cases, even a viable alternative to a good neighborhood local school.
I mean, I love my public school. And so I believe that I would love to see it across the state be funded in a way that we could all imagine what we could do. I mean, honestly, I see a $7 billion surplus, but a decade and a half of disinvestment in public schools. And I sit here and I say, that's not good governance. I believe in fiscal responsibility. My house is fiscally responsible, but if I had a huge surplus but wasn't meeting the needs of my own kids, that's not fiscal responsibility by any means.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see if Heather is able to join us as well. Heather, you with us this morning? Oh. No, I'm not hearing you over stream. Although I do see, are you on the phone as well? Maybe we can put that on there. Let me just hit a little button and see if that works. Are you okay? Heather, are you with us by phone?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Now I hear you over the phone just fine. Hey, thank you for calling in. Sorry, we've got our little technical snafus here, but I know that you've been able to hear a bit from Danielle. I've got 30 seconds till break. So did you want to give any general impression before we go to commercial here, Heather?
Yeah, since I just was able to jump in. I missed the question. So I'll join you after the break.
Okay, well, Heather Dubois-Bornan joins us from the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Danielle Whitaker is a parent in Bristol in Kenosha County and a new school board member as well. And when we come back, we'll take much more time to discuss just what's being proposed, how public education is getting more funding, but so are voucher schools who are not nearly as accountable. And so as a result, kids are not getting all the educational opportunities they truly deserve. More next. You're up.
Doesn't mean much. It doesn't mean anything at all.
As we mentioned earlier in our history lesson and music break, the first Lilith Fair kicked off with Sarah McLachlan on this day in 1997. Well, a few technical gremlins notwithstanding, we've been talking to Daniel Whitaker, a school board member from the Bristol area, and Heather Dubois-Bornan is joining us as well from the Wisconsin Public Education Network, and she's trying to get clicked in either by phone or through her AirPods. Heather, I think we've got you on the phone at least. Are you able to hear us all right?
I can hear you now, Pat. Can you hear me?
Yes, hear you wonderfully. Thank you. Okay, as we wait for Danielle to come back on, let's talk from a Wisconsin Public Education Network standpoint. And let me ask it this way, in terms of this week and the matter of whether Governor Evers should veto this budget or try to fix it with line item vetoes, is there a stance that the Wisconsin Public Education Network and its members are taking on this?
Our board has joined many other coalition partners around the state in calling on Governor Evers to reject a budget that would send kids back to school for what would be the 15th year in a row without an inflationary level of increase to their funding. The gap right now between what the private schools and the independent vouchers are getting as a brand new and guaranteed increase in both ability to spend and spendable funds from the state is so unfair and so what we call gap widening in terms of making existing disparities worse that it's just not something I think we can justify doing. And I think the question that folks have been asking is why, at a time of historic surplus, are we even considering the possibility of sending our kids back to school once again with less than when we know we could make moves in this budget to start closing those gaps. So that's what our board has called and our staff agrees. Our network partners around the state are really conflicted. You know, they're so used to a system that underfunds and underserves that they're scared of risking the tiny increase that they got now because they're literally afraid, people have told us, that our legislature is so malicious that it would make the budget even worse for public schools should they return to a base budget if the governor vetoes it. I like to have a little bit more faith in our elected officials than that, and I would hope that our Republican legislators who pushed this budget through would take mercy on the children they serve and look at the numbers that came out from the DPI last week and fix this budget so that more districts go back to school with some spendable aid, because right now fewer than 60% do.
But Heather, we've also seen when we talk about being afraid of this legislature, they provided more reason for that fear this week in passing a budget with a $7 billion surplus that not only gave nothing extra to the University of Wisconsin system, but gave it a symbolic cut in funding because, again, they didn't like something that the university system was doing. So I guess I definitely see how those fears are warranted to have a legislature that is so hostile to the notion of a free local public education.
Yeah, that sort of heavy-handedness, the political game playing with not just the budget, but sort of the policy level stuff, trying to tell the university what it can spend its money on, trying to dictate what sort of programs are and aren't good for kids from the state house, is really part of a larger problem that we've seen in this state of lawmakers creating an unrealistic and unhelpful sense of distrust in our public institutions, and they're sort of constant undermining them and you know, choking them of funding and then accusing them of, you know, not being effective or efficient when they've done the best they could with those scarce resources. You know, it's just a classic example of that, and it's really tragic. And that's one of the things that we definitely oppose in this budget is that $32 million cut to the UW system. And also the other things in the budget that really hurt kids, cutting child care shares, $320 million to that program. That's going to be devastating for children and families and economies around the state. What are we thinking right now? It makes no sense. We need to invest in a budget that positions our children to thrive, that invest in the public schools that are the hearts of our communities. And right now we are miles away from the budget that Governor Evers initially proposed that would have put $2.6 billion into our public schools. And the proposal on the table is an absolute joke.
Here's the thing. We can't even get to the fiscal concerns, the dollars and cents going to these school districts, when it appears that other groups have created these other social issue, I would argue, distractions, whether it's related to banning books, dictating curriculum. Of course, we're familiar with the old, you know, masking, vaccine, and closure fights from the pandemic. We have a group now called Moms for Liberty, and this Moms for Liberty group is quickly being exposed as being far from a grassroots group about parental rights. But Heather, it raises the question, you know, whose parental rights? Whose parental rights matter more in Wisconsin? And you know, what about the kids' rights? What are your thoughts on that, Heather?
No, I hear you. I'm taking my time with this one because, I mean, it's just such a false flag, as we used to call it, right? We're chasing the wrong problem here. Only our public schools protect the rights of our children to a free and equitable public education, one that allows them the opportunity to have all their needs met, their needs if they are students with disability, their rights if they are an LGBTQ student, their rights to be protected against discrimination by the systems that serve them. If you choose to send your child to a different kind of institution, those rights are no longer guaranteed. So my concern has never been with the choices that parents are making for what they think is best for their kids. Parents should always make the choices they think are best for their kids. That's not my concern. My concern is the right of the students to thrive in their school setting. And our obligation as a state and our obligation as a community of people who care about kids is to make sure that those rights are being protected at the school level and that the state is meeting its obligation to affirm and defend those rights. And right now our state is not doing its job and is doing everything it seems in its power, as you said, to kind of facilitate distrust and dissent and challenges that make it harder for our public schools to serve our kids. Meanwhile, we're throwing money at systems that don't have to follow federal law protecting students, that put these entitlements above the state's obligation to fund its private schools, and it's absolutely unethical.
Heather, Danielle, the point that I've made frequently is that this isn't about being anti-private school necessarily. This is about using our tax dollars in ways that, you know, again, siphon it away quite intentionally from our public education, something that you've talked about seeing with your business background and now as a new school board member, the amount of money that could be used for the betterment of all students, not just those, you know, either of means or privilege or, you know, a certain series of social beliefs.
Well, the two things that were shocking that I discovered is the reimbursement rate for special education. Again, prior to about a year ago, never asked any of these questions as just a resident or as a parent. I mean, the fact that our state would this last year reimburse like our school 30%, 30 cents on the dollar. But if they go down the street to a private school, they'd be reimbursed at 90%. I have no other way to compute that, to see that huge discrepancy, and it's completely unfair. And then, you know, just to learn more about that. And then even the messages of what was signed a couple of weeks ago, where they're talking about $1 billion invested in our students. I don't think that that's really accurately even representing what's already been signed, because they talked about a cost per instruction increase. Well, first of all, I'm finding out that cost per instruction increase, which doesn't mean inflation again, is still rated on scale. So we as a school still have no idea what we'll receive on that increase, but also they're essentially giving revenue authority. So in my mind, the local state legislator decided to make me go back to local taxpayers to go through a revenue authority instead of, again, using a surplus that we have and funding where we're able to. Our biggest thing would be special education that needs to be bumped. Our neighboring states have figured it out, and we're just woefully behind.
Danielle, when you decided to run for school board, you said there was a lot to learn. You likened it to peeling back an onion.
Yeah.
But what is it that you want your neighbors to know that you've learned since getting on the school board? Because you clearly learned enough to motivate yourself to run, but now you know that you're being put in the role of bad guy by the legislature because you're the one that has to ask voters if they'll increase their taxes. Based on that knowledge and others, what other things are you trying to make sure that your neighbors understand about the school funding system in Wisconsin?
Even in our situation, ours, if we had to change things, would likely be tax neutral. So I'm thankful for that. I'm also so proud of our school, who have consistently done so much with what they have received. I think just to continually to ask more questions, there's annual meetings. I'd love for people, even if you don't, school is always a proximity issue. If you have kids in the district, you're motivated to ask questions, maybe grandkids. But if you're a resident, just learn more about this and don't necessarily believe all the press releases that are put out there. You have to ask questions and see the history. And as I've explored and learned more, that's helped me understand kind of the dynamics of what's taking place. And bottom line, if you're going 16 years with adjustments that are below inflation, I wouldn't stay at a job if that was the case. But students don't have a choice. It means a kid who started in kindergarten went the entire length of their school career with adjustments that don't even meet inflation. That's not fair to students. So that's what I want parents and our community members to know, and to put some pressure on those who are elected. Whatever side of the spectrum that we're on, most people agree and most people want to support their public school. And so I'd love for our community to speak more to our elected officials so they can, one, know how your representative voted, and then communicate your request to your elected officials.
And then, Heather, to wrap things up, it is just so important to repeat something Danielle said, that in the entirety of somebody graduating this year, their legislators never kept public school spending up with inflation. They never took any substantive action on, you know, preventing school shootings. They're cutting the University of Wisconsin system and affordable child care programs. It sure seems, Heather, that this is not the strategy you'd want to address a labor shortage, much less a quality of life issue in Wisconsin.
Absolutely not. And Danielle is exactly right. We can't believe the hype around this budget or around how school funding works. We just have to look at the facts. And the facts are 39% of districts are going to go back to school with less state aid than they had this year. And that's after 2 years of $0 in increased spendable aid from the state. That is absolutely wrong. Local taxpayers are going to be footing the bill for this budget for a generation to come, and it's outrageous. Another thing that we haven't mentioned, Pat, is that nearly 80% of kids participating in the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program, that's the one that goes statewide, never set foot in a public school. These are kids who have always already been in private schools or who, you know, started them in kindergarten after the program had started.
And we're simply, yeah, subsidizing something that was already underway. And with that, we've run out of time for this segment. Heather Dubois-Bornan from the Wisconsin Public Education Network, Danielle Whitaker from Bristol School Board. Thank you both so very much. Great to visit with you both, and wish you all the best on your continued efforts.
Thanks, Pat.
All right, we will take a break and wrap up our conversation for this Wednesday morning next. You're up north. We don't have time for me to tell the story about how my wife once tried to throw a surprise birthday party for me, and I unintentionally undermined it by agreeing to work a double shift that day because I didn't think my wife was doing anything for my birthday. So there was no party. She had to send everybody home. And yet here I get this surprise party. Dr. Lyerly joins us from an undisclosed location out west, and Todd Alba joins us because I asked him to, but it's still a surprise when he shows up here because he doesn't have to. Good morning, kids.
Good morning.
All right.
Good morning. And can I just mention that your wife continues to be amazing? Because I don't know if our listeners obviously can't see us, but we're all decked out in our Pat Kreitlow plaid shirts today.
Yep. Oh my gosh. Look at, yeah. I thought something looked a little different about Aaron. Look at that. Now I feel bad. I was going to put on a plaid one today and went for just solid black. I'm the outlier here, but that's so cute. You guys are fun. Thank you.
Well, let's bring it back to the amazing Dr. Kreitlow, who requests that you reach down into your right desk drawer.
Oh, me? I thought it was Todd that was supposed to do that. Okay. No, wait a minute.
Open it slowly.
Oh, wait.
Slowly, yes.
Yes, because
there's a note here. It says, throw this in the air, very festive. it's a bag of glitter to throw in the air. Like, I'm going to do that to my office? All right, you guys said to. Here we go.
Look at that.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh, wait, I have a desk fan. Let's try this bad boy.
You have a desk fan?
Wow. I have a little tiny plug-in one, but I didn't have it on. Oh, God.
Oh boy. That's going right into your lungs.
Okay. That's
right there. That's
good. Reach back into your desk drawer. You're not done.
This looks like a little pom-pom or something.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Right. For those listening on the radio that don't have the stream, that can't see it, Pat Kreitlow is now covered in gold.
What is that? This is a mug, a drink mug. Do I even want to know what this is? Am I supposed to taste it?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you trust your wife?
That's a Bloody Mary. Oh.
All right. Let's see. Is that it? Wait a minute. One more thing. Oh, no.
Just a drink napkin that she put it on. That's you guys. Wow.
There you go.
Wow. I'm blown away. Literally by this fan. I got to shut this off. Man, I am. Look at this. I was solid black. Now I'm covered head to toe.
Now you're solid gold. Glitter. You're a solid gold radio announcer.
Wow. All right. Well,
gold.
Yeah, this is Here's a sign of my advanced age. I'm thinking more about the vacuuming than I'm thinking about the actual, you know, party that's going on here.
Fair enough.
But now there's a post-show Bloody Mary waiting for me. So I got that going for me, which is nice. Thanks, you guys.
Absolutely.
How about a little toast to Pat on his birthday?
Oh, well, thank you. Oh, look at that. Everybody's got their mugs. Nobody else has a Bloody Mary. At least you better not.
Here's to Pat Kreitlow. Mm. Cheers. Happy birthday.
I cannot believe she pulled this off. Wow. This is, I'm kind of speechless. I got to figure out how she did this, you know, because
well, you get two physicians together, they can pretty much, two women physicians, they can do anything.
They truly can. Yes, I know.
We had a lot of discussions about exactly what to put in your drawer.
I remember you two were texting, and all Sherry said was something like, oh, you know, doctor talk or whatever. Sherry's never struck me as, see, this is no longer this little pom-pom here that she made. It's actually, I'm now using it as a feather duster to get all the glitter off of my keyboard here and my mouse pad. Yikes. She's never struck me as the conspiratorial person. And yet there you two are conspiring. That was very kind of you. What else did you on your holiday weekend? Did you get to rest a bit, or were you working the whole time through out west?
I'm actually in northern Minnesota, and yep, we have delivered a lot of babies this weekend. It's been lots of explosion of babies.
Any on Monday that share that very special birthday? None on Monday. Oh, okay. Well, see, it just
I left that up to you.
Okay, that's okay. But you had some July. Did you have July 4th babies, or were they over the weekend?
We had a few July 4th babies.
Okay. Which means their birthday, like mine, their birthday parties will be, you know, very few and far between, because all their friends will be out camping or, you know, with family or whatever. So I'm in solidarity with those July 4th babies who have to share their birthday, much like the Christmas babies that have to do the same thing. But you know what? We make the best of it. And sometimes you get really nice surprises like this. This is very awesome.
Let's be honest. Birthdays come when they come. So it doesn't matter whether it's on the 4th of July or on Christmas Day or Thanksgiving. You are surrounded by people who love you.
Aww.
And it is your special day. And, you know, it's about you.
Aw, thank you. And thank you. Thank you to Matt Brown there for the little Facebook comment on it as well. So nice to know that people had tuned in and were very surprised as I was. And at this point have now tuned out. They want to come. Maybe they can come back after I finish this Bloody Mary and I can come on, you know, Todd's show. And boy, we could really have a segment then, couldn't we? Todd's muted. What did
you're muted.
Uh-oh, Todd, come on, man. See, now we had that problem with a guest earlier. Maybe it's Aaron. Maybe
I don't think it's me. Okay. I think he might have hit a button on his mic or something.
You think he might have hit
a button? Wait a minute.
Oh, there he is. He's back now. What did you do?
I thought I've hit it on the StreamYard thing. It wasn't that. It was my mute button on my board.
You have a board there?
A little mixer board for my mic.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Sounds good. What did the rest of your family do, Kristen? Your boys, are they like campers? Are they fireworks fans? Are they sit around and be bums? You know, what's a 4th of July like when you're home with the boys?
Kind of random, you know. Mm-hmm. The older they get, every year is different. As mm-hmm. your family is growing, every holiday is a little bit different. You don't know who's coming. You don't know who's not going to be able to be there. You know, you just kind of, just like life, you just roll with it.
You were asking Aaron before about fireworks around Lake Wasota, because I talked about I can fall asleep to anything nowadays with these early hours. And one of the best parts about being on the lake, and I don't know, Kristen, if you have this in Green Bay or Todd, where you are, but you basically get, you know, theater in the round. If you take your boat out on Lake Wasota, you know, after sunset, and people are setting them off all over the place. So there's no like one big organized show, but yeah, you get fireworks, a 360 degree fireworks show on the lake. If you choose to go out there, the more I've done this, I'm like, I don't trust these boaters. I'm not going out there anymore. So I'll just, sometimes I'll just stand at the end of the dock and watch it. And it's really nice. It's, you know, again, that's that whole summer in Wisconsin thing. It's why we do this here in the Midwest.
Todd, we have completely wasted your opportunity to promote your show.
Not a waste at all.
So
it should be. It's the Pat Kreitlow show. Well, at least the next one will be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can find out if Todd, you know, actually had something worthwhile to say by tuning in from 1 to 3 weekday afternoons. Kristen, we'll you're amazing. Thank you so much.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, right. Pat.
Thanks, you guys. Have a wonderful Wednesday. We'll do this again tomorrow morning. 6:00.